is Just One More. I'm Michael Healy, and this is Just One More. Our most recent episode about mentors was dominated by stories of one mentor, the actor, writer, and director, Gina Wilkinson. Gina was a complete theater artist, and she was also fun, generous, caring, and just an impossibly daring spirit. Her sudden death in 2010 at the age of 50 was a heartbreaking event for everybody in the Canadian theater community. So for this bonus episode, I thought I'd just play a conversation I had with a good friend and collaborator of Gina's, Elisa Mulicherry. Elisa is an actor, and though she's Toronto-based now, she ran various theater projects in Germany and elsewhere in Europe in the 2000s. A warning, there's high art and low behavior discussed in this conversation. You had a long association with Gina Wilkinson.
Yes, I did. I did. I think I met her the summer I got out of theater school. So it was my first time. It wasn't my first show in Toronto, but it was my second theater production in Toronto. And it was a summer work show with an up and coming playwright named Sean Raycraft.
Oh yeah, that guy.
I think it was his first play, to be honest. Really? And I believe it might have been Kelly Thornton's first time directing.
My God.
Yeah. And
Kelly is now the artistic director at the Royal Manitoba Theatre Centre.
I know. It's amazing. I'm so happy for her. She's very well suited for that. So bravo.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It would be great. I could use a job, Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly. Program the jar boy. What's wrong with you?
You know, I helped you.
That's right.
And so Gina was in that show, and so was Blair Williams and myself and two other young kids just fresh out of theater school. Mm-hmm. Watching Gina work then, I mean, she was just an amazing person and an amazing personality with a heart of gold. And I believe it was our opening of that show that, so I think at the time, Gina was with David Storch and Kelly was with Alex Posh-Golden. Mm-hmm. And they were both doing Angels in America at Cannes Stage. And so I think they were in rehearsals and they would always come meet us at Squirrelly's on Queen Street. And we would go for drinks. And after the opening of the show, it was a bit clunky. And so it didn't quite go exactly as we hoped. And so perhaps we drank a little bit too much on that particular occasion. And of course, I think there was a now legalized substance that was being passed around.
Right. Right.
Me being very green, I became very green after drinking and smoking. And then I ended up in the bathroom of Squirrelly's on the floor.
God.
Probably purging myself of all evil that I had ever done in my 20 years of life. And it was Gina Wilkinson who actually came downstairs and cleaned everything up. I mean, literally cleaned everything up in Squirrelly's. And that's the feat, because that was probably not just my stuff.
Oh, God, that place.
Many more than I've been sick there.
Oh.
Got me up on my feet, put me in a taxi cab, took me home, walked me up my stairs to my apartment, tucked me into bed. And when I woke up in the morning, she had written me a letter, just the words, "I love you, Gina." And that was my real getting to know Gina Wilkinson and the beginning of what ended up being.
Wow.
A very...
There's no better person to hold your hair.
Oh my God.
When necessary.
Yes, I know. Such a loving, caring person, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I want to even do that for my own kids.
Yeah.
But Gina, she has like a heart of gold. Like this
Yeah.
woman had generosity and such great abundance. And the thing about Gina, like even hearing other people talk about her, and Lane Coleman has this amazing story about her, like the first time he saw her walking into a room and just all eyes would go to her. She was so charismatic, and she was the person that I think everyone felt seen by. So like you had a conversation with her and you felt like you were the only person that mattered. She was so fantastic in that way. And I think when she passed away, everybody kind of felt like her closest friend. She'd made us all feel so special. It was, I think, a really hard thing to give up. For us, it was a huge loss.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gina, there aren't enough words to describe this woman.
It's really true. She left a massive hole. And and then her memorial was at the Bluma, which is 900 seats, right? And it was overflowing. Like we were there with our newborn twins, and we had planned to just kind of stand in the lobby. We had to stand in the lobby because,
Likewise,
yeah,
I was
because it was
in the
packed
lobby.
out. Yeah,
There
just.
wasn't space. Yeah. And it was crazy. But I mean, that just kind of is a testament of how strongly the community felt about her. She really had an effect on so many, and she really cared about artists. She invested in artists. And of course, there's this now this is it a grant that they have in her name?
Yeah, it's a prize. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. The Jeannie Wilkinson Prize, yes. So I think that's quite fitting because she was that type of person who was always willing to invest so much of her time in nurturing other people's talents.
Yeah. And when she started directing, because she didn't start out as a director, when she started directing, that was her entire MO was to empower the actors, the artists on stage. Her whole job was to make you feel like you were seen, and like all the work you were doing was appreciated, and that you were fully empowered as an artist to bring everything you had to the
Yes.
part. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm such an incredibly creative director, too. And I think one of the things that I really appreciated with her is that she never, theater was so, it's own thing, like, and many times it can seem somewhat filmic, or you can see, look at something on stage and be like, oh, I could see how that could be made into a film. With her stuff, it wasn't that way. It was really theater in and up into itself. It was just, she understood the magic of theater and that special place, that it gave you permission to do things that you couldn't do on a screen, and to be inventive and creative, creating pictures and images, that would convey and further the story in an interesting and creative way. She was always very creative. I mean, like one of the plays she came to direct for my theater company. I had a theater company in Germany called Bimi Theater, and she came to direct for us twice. One being Good Night, Desdemona, Good Morning, Juliet, and the other one being her own play, My Mother's Feet. And it's probably the only time that like I've ever had to make sure that like my list of the checklists that I needed, things that I needed to acquire for this play included a bathtub and a bear costume.
Right. That's when producing is fun. But you got to go out and find a bunch of weird
Exactly.
stuff
Like
because
in
Gina
the
Wilkinson's coming. Yeah.
And she was great. And I have to say that the Germans loved her.
Yeah.
It was probably the play that the people were most appreciative, because I think in Germany too, that the whole idea of theater is really that the director is the auteur, like the director is the artist that we want to appreciate, and we want to see what they're going to do. And she certainly rose to the occasion, because it was her own play and they loved the play, but they also really loved her direction and her interpretation of her own work. So she was incredibly creative.
Yeah. Germans are great for like, they're waiting for you to go weird. And they're a little upset when you don't.
No, so, absolutely. And I got into a bit of a debate with somebody who was the sort of the artistic director of their version of the National Theater School. There had been a production of Streetcar Named Desire at the Kammerspiele in Munich. And Kammerspiele is a state-run theater company. And this particularly, it wasn't really Streetcar Named Desire. I mean, like typical German theater, within 30 seconds, like pretty much Blanche was, she was completely naked. And there was a lot of interpretation to the piece. Let's put it this way. There was a real, a lot of reading between the lines, a lot of things that were happening between the lines, a very different version than I had been familiar with. And I remember this woman asking me, who was a very acclaimed director herself, what I thought of the piece. And just as I was about to say, well, her response was, I loved it, because really, what can you do that's different with that piece? It's been done so much. Like, what can you do that's different? And I realized that that's really, they want to see what you can do that will be different. We don't want to see the same thing. It's not necessary. Right. So it's not about the writers, it's not even about the actors, it's about the director. And so Gina did quite well. Although she was very good about like staying true to the script and staying true to the actors as well. So like, but it was interesting, she just managed to, she walked a very fine line where she told the story and the actors felt completely supported, but she told it in such a creative, interesting way that it really appealed to the German culture as well.
That's pretty good. Yeah, she, it's interesting. You describe her like off the top as being such a generous person. And she was that. She also had the capacity for an enormous amount of daring, an enormous amount of personal, her willingness to take risk was, as an actor and as a person, was a huge part of her, her personality. And the fact that she blended that with the intention and the desire to always be generous to the artist she was around and the people that she was with was, it's kind of amazing. Cause you know, I know lots of people who are, you know, fantastic risk takers. I know lots of people who are, who take care of people. And I don't know many people who do both the way that Gina did.
It's very true. And like in terms of, you know, talking about being daring, I mean, that was also kind of how she lived her life. And there was never really a boring moment when Gina Wilkinson was around. You know, there was always something interesting, an interesting conversation happening or something. There was always, she was a very passionate individual. And I am thinking about the, when she was over directing for us in Munich, Goodnight Desdemona, Good Morning Juliet, there were five of us actors and we all went out with Gina to a bar, et cetera. And of course, as one does, we were drinking. This is yet another drinking story, but nobody was sick in a bathroom. Instead, somebody did go to the bathroom and discovered that there was the sex toy dispenser in Germany. And it was the, you know, pay €2. and you can have various various items that you can take home with you or not. And so when Gina caught wind of this, like I said, she was always up for anything. We of course pooled our €2 together, and the next thing I knew, that one of the gentlemen was purchasing one of the toys. And I believe it was called Travel Pussy.
All right, what's Travel Pussy in German? Because that's got to be a great compound in the world.
With the English. I think, you know, it's very funny because I find that a lot of times when they want to talk about something, is they usually use a different language if it's a bit kind of risque in their own language. Well, if we say it in English, it's gonna be a little bit more tame.
Right. How big is a travel pussy?
Well, it came in a small package, so it was probably only a couple of I think it was a very small package, but then you had to put it together. So it was German engineering at its finest. Like, it was quite minimal, but you had to, it was kind of like a balloon almost, that I think would be blown up, and it came with its own lubricant but it was created in such a way that, yeah, it could be used as a travel on the road. But of course, you know, we all needed to, and Gina was there, we all needed to have our experience with it. We just passing it around amongst the table and exploring it with our hands. But I believe that that German engineering did get the approval from Gina Wilkinson on this particular item. It was one of those things where we're like, oh, okay, this is very good. This is actually, I could see this if you close your eyes.
Oh God. She taught me the phrase beef lips.
Beef lips?
Yes. It's a euphemism. It's another word for a vagina. And like just the most repulsive term. And she offered it to me purely in the interest of shocking the shit out of me. Because we didn't know each other that well when she was talking about her vulva suddenly. You know,
she didn't get around to showing you any pictures.
No.
That was the second time you met her.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's great. So, and she was there twice, and she directed both times.
Yeah, she did. Well, she came three times. So I started the company in Barcelona. And it was my very first time producing anything. We did a production of The Anchor, and Ernest and Ernestine and Micheline Chevrier came over to direct it. And Tom Rooney came over to act with me. I was very fortunate to have very, very talented friends.
No kidding.
And then Gina came with Tom. And although she wasn't technically in the show, she really was in the show. Like she did the design pretty much, and costuming, and she was there painting things, and she painted my dress and did artwork on our shoes, and my dress had it was fantastic. She did so many butterflies on it, but all of the butterflies were fallacies. They were just like the body of the butterflies were like penises, essentially. Yeah. she always had something that kind of kept her interested as well. And then she did a picture of Tom and a picture of me on either of our shoes, and the resemblance was quite striking. It was really amazing. She was an amazing artist as well.
Oh my God, she could draw too.
She could do everything. She was an amazing painter and visual artist as well. And it's amazing how much talent can go into one person and still have like an incredibly humongous heart and brains. This woman was so smart. Yeah. Her vocabulary, even reading her play, I remember mispronouncing some of the words. Because I was like, I don't actually know this word, but I'm going to pretend I do.
And she'll take you aside very gently and say, no, it's pronounced beef lips.
I was saying beef lips or something.
Oh my God. Well, she was great. What a hole, as they said, in the Canadian theater, because she worked across the country when she died. Far too young. My God.
I remember Micheline Chevalier saying to me when she went to visit her in the hospital towards the end, that one of Gina's comments was, there's still so much to do. Yeah. And for Gina, absolutely. She had so much still left to do and explore and show us. And I'm most sad for us that we didn't get to see it and we didn't get to experience it, because we needed more of her in our art scene, in our lives. She was one of a kind. They broke the mold with her. That one was a very tough but it's interesting, you know, the way she the way everything happened at the end of her life was very I feel like it was, I'm completely at a loss for words speaking about this. It was so fast. Like the knowledge of her being diagnosed and then her death was so fast. Yeah. If you wrote it, you would have been like, whoa, where's the third act?
Right.
You know, it was so, it happened so quickly. But in a weird sort of way, there was something kind of oddly poetic about how she left. I mean, she was doing things that she loved doing. She was in the middle of, she'd finished directing one show, was in the middle of directing something else. And then it all kind of bang, bang, bang happened. She ended up getting married to Tom. It was just all very, very fast and incredibly moving. Like I said, that you can't have small emotions when you think about Gina Wilkinson, because she was not small.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. It really did. At a distance, it seemed like the end of her life was she was an artist to the end. She it was considered she didn't just get swept up in events and swept away. She was determined to use the time she had. She, as you said, married Tom, mm-hmm. Right at the end, and it seemed like she was very, very determined to finish well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I
left. She did the French goodbye.
Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> And but yeah, it's funny. I still have a pair of earrings that she gave me. I think it was after one of the openings. It was probably after My Mother's Feet, the one that she had written and directed. Mm-hmm. And they were earrings, and they say dream and believe. And that was her.
Yeah.
That was it. That was kind of her motto. She had huge dreams and a great sense of belief in artists and art and the work, and it showed.
Yeah,
I don't have that kind of faith. She,
oh my God.
Like, she really had such belief in the work, and that's where her passion came from, and her, like, her dreams, like her creativity was so enormous.
Yeah. And undeniable. She would not be denied. She was going to become a theater artist in a country where people can't become theater artists, you know, not in any kind of sustainable way, but she bent the entire entertainment sector to her will. And anyway,
yeah,
it was pretty great.
I know. So dream and believe.